I'd like to welcome everybody to Parshas Balak, the famous story of the non-Jewish prophet whose name was Bilam. It's very confusing. When you learn this Parsha, you got to get these two names straight. You've got to get Balak and Bilam. Balak is the king, Bilam is the prophet. Balak hires Bilam, the prophet, who was probably the guru of the non-Jewish world, to try to subdue the Jewish people somehow, because everybody was getting it from the Jewish people. The Amalekites, the Canaanites, the Egyptians, of course, and some nations before then, Og, the big giant Og, they were all getting it from the land of Israel. The Jewish people obviously had somebody on their side. And what can we do about the Jewish problem? Sound familiar? So they turned, they didn't want to resort to warfare because they thought they would lose. They turned to this prophet and they said, if you can curse the Jews, then God will not be able to protect them. So this is the story of the prophet Bilam attempting to curse the Jews. And the issue that we want to discuss, and this is an obvious question that people have when they study, is where did the non-Jews come up with a prophet? What is a prophet? A prophet is somebody who prepares himself, trains himself very, very long and hard to be extremely, extremely righteous and holy and pure and has such connection with God because he has time and time again shown his dominion over his evil inclination. He has shown that he is dedicated to completely following the inclination of good, the Yetzer HaTov. Not that he doesn't have a Yetzer Hara, but that he knows how to he knows how to control it, he knows how to subdue it, he knows how to dominate it. Maimonides writes that Ein hanavua chala elo al gibor b'midosav. Prophecy cannot rest upon anyone but a mighty warrior in character. V'lo yehe yitzro miskaber alav b'davar sheba'olam. His evil inclination will not get the better of him in any area in the world. Elohu mizgaber b'da'ato al yitzro tamid. Rather, he will overpower in his mind over his inclination always. We're talking about a heavyweight. The notion that that there would be a non-Jew who would, without the Torah, without the lineage to Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob, and we're not that far away from the beginnings of the Jewish people, but particularly without the Torah, without the intense training that Torah and conditioning that Torah provides, can be such a master over his evil inclination, it's just hard to fathom. Now, furthermore, we have some incriminating evidence about Bilam. We have testimony from our own teachings that he was one of the worst in the area of evil. Let me give you a short biography of our guest speaker, Bilam. I want to read to you from Pirkei Avos. I think we read it. It's in the fifth chapter. I think we read it this past Shabbos for Mincha. This is chapter 5, paragraph 22. Whoever has the following three traits is among the disciples of our forefather Abraham. And whoever has three different traits is among the disciples of, who would you choose? Esav, Paro. Who would you choose, right? To be the antithesis of Abraham. Amalek. the wicked Bilam. So if Avraham is the best, Bilam is the worst. 579. Those who have a good eye meaning generous, judging favorably, a humble spirit, the opposite of arrogant, and a meek soul. Meek soul meaning not desirous and lustful, but very easy to be satisfied with what he has and concentrating on spiritual matters. So such a person are among the disciples of our forefather Abraham. Those who have an evil eye, an arrogant spirit, and a greedy soul are among the disciples of the wicked Bilam. So Bilam the prophet, Bilam the wicked. How do these two character sketches jive? So that's a question that everyone really confronts when they, even beside this actual storyline of, okay, the Parsha goes through step by step how Balak contracted Bilam. Bilam said no. There's a whole big issue about a prophet being able to say words of curse if God doesn't want him to say that. God controls, just as God can give prophetic insight to a prophet, he can also actually control their speech. Indeed, in the Parsha we see that Bilam, instead of uttering curses, actually blesses the Jewish people time and time again. And that is because he understood that he's powerless, that God controls his tongue, literally.
Well, that wouldn't be just true for a prophet.
That would be true for everyone. That's true. And there's a reference to that in the book of Exodus when Moshe was saying that how can he be representative to Pharaoh? He has a speech impediment, and Hashem grows angry with him and says, "Who do you think gives a man speech or makes him speechless? It is I." And so that's really part of it, that speech is a gift from God, and it can be taken away. So it's interesting. There's a lot to discuss in this parsha about the dynamics, and why was Bilam even trying to curse them if he knew that he would be muzzled by God? That's another. But just on the very, very premise that there could be a person who seems to not have the qualifications, but can be a prophet, and this is something with which all the commentaries discuss. The most famous comment is probably quoted by Rashi and the very beginning of the Parsha. It's in the beginning of the Parsha, chapter 22. God in his wisdom ordained that the Gentile nations should have a prophet who would be comparable to Moses, though much inferior to him, so that they, the Gentile nations, would not be able to contend that if only they had had someone who could communicate to them the will of God, they would have been as righteous as Israel. So God said, well, let's see. Let's try it. So he gave them Bilam the prophet, and proof is in the pudding that did not inspire them to do the will of God.
Why did he give a wicked person?
That's another good question. That's Rabbi Weinberg Zatzal's famous question. That's not fair. You want to give them a chance, so you give them a wicked person. And Rabbi Weinberg, therefore, his conclusion was that Bilam wasn't a wicked person when he was given prophecy, but his wicked nature came out when he was given such power. And like we said before, that without Torah as our guide, power corrupts. And he was trying to say, well, it's not going to help you to have a prophet, because even if you have a prophet who is qualified to be righteous and everything, he's going to corrupt him, and he will not lead you.
But how could he not be wicked if he didn't have Torah learning and...
Right. I mean, that's basically what God is saying. Saying, and this goes back to the giving of the Torah at Sinai when he offered the Torah to other nations, and they didn't accept it.
But behind all these questions is the fact that I thought the reason that he gave them one is so later on they couldn't complain that they didn't have one. So
right.
He gave them one knowing that he wouldn't be Jewish, then that's not giving them...
But he gave him somebody who was, as Rav Weinberg said, he was probably the most righteous man.
But he didn't have Torah. So he's not on the level with the rest of
them. They already can't say, well, you didn't give us Torah, because he had offered them the Torah. The only thing they could say was, well, you didn't give us a prophet. And so God said, I'll give you a prophet. But realize that without Torah, the prophet's not going to help.
Yeah, right. So
it goes back, they'll see their own shortfall that they, by not accepting the Torah, they basically opted out. But be that as it may, eventually Bilaam had become an evil person and he was still receiving prophecy.
Hmm.
And prophecy, no matter how you slice it, God is communicating to the prophet till he sees a very, very clear picture, which is more clear than we can attain with our intellect. It's something of a clear, as if there's vision. You know, it's a very deep subject, what prophecy is and what it looks like, but I'm saying the bare basics is that it's something more than perception of intellect. It's something that is a clear perception of truth without any doubt. And Rav Dessler quotes many sources that he did have a prophetic vision similar to Moshe's, but on a lower level. But to have that type of vision, that type of revelation, requires, says Maimonides, a great person who's at one with God and is devoid of evil. So it doesn't seem congruous to have an evil person getting prophecy.
Mm.
So I just really, as I said, it's a short thing. This is in the fourth volume. I'm sorry. I tried to find something in the first volume because the fourth volume is usually deeper stuff, which I don't fully understand. I don't fully understand this. But there is nothing really substantive about Balak that I could find, other than the fourth volume. So, volume of Michtav Me'Eliyahu, this Rabbi Dessler, this series that we're studying from. But I'll tell you what the bottom line is and how it relates to our character development, because that's really what our interest in, what Rav Dessler's interest is. It's not academic. So he says basically the following thing. He first of all, he quotes a passage from Rabbi Luzzatto's book, The Path of the Just. The foundation of saintliness and the root of perfection in the service of God lies in a man's coming to see clearly and to recognize as a truth the nature of his duty in the world and the end towards which he should direct his vision and his aspiration in all of his labors, all the days of his life. Stated, our mission on earth is to come to see clearly and to recognize as a truth what is our duty. This is Rabbi Luzzatto's famous opening statement of Mesilas Yesharim, A Path of the Just. And Rav Dessler asked a question. There's no word in this book, the Vilna Gaon himself attested that there's no word in this book that's unnecessary. The Vilna Gaon did not shower compliments like that all the time.
You're talking about in Rabbi Luzzatto's
words. So the word in Hebrew says, Sheyis barer v'yisames, coming to see clearly and recognizing as truth. This is what Rav Dessler examines. What's the difference between coming to see clearly and recognizing as truth? Seems a little redundant. Yeah.
Is it that the recognition of it as a truth ascertains that it was given by God?
And coming to see clearly,
it means you have an open mind. You don't come with any preconditions when you come to learn something.
That's the which one? Coming to see clearly. That's the first step. And the second step, which is a higher level, mm-hmm. is drawing the conclusion.
Willingness to.
So the first step is just having an open mind, and the second step is actually absorbing it. Is that what we're saying?
Yeah.
Am I putting words in anyone's mouth?
Well, I think for Jews, though, it's having an open mind, but getting all of your information from the Torah.
Mm-hmm. So that would be seeing clearly, is getting the information.
It was seeing, yeah, that's right.
See, I think Rabbi Luzzatto understood that coming to see clearly is also the result of one's, processing, not just the process itself. That they're both results, that they're both levels of accomplishment, but that there's two different levels. You know, when you try to study or you try to absorb, you will reach a point in which you will, quote, see it clearly. But then if you keep on trying, keep on learning, keep on absorbing, you will come to another, like, down the road, another level where you recognize it as truth. What's the difference? Seeing it clearly is, you don't see things clearly if they're not true.
Maybe the second level you're actually living in.
You might.
For me, it's one thing to see it and say, yeah, that's where I want to be, but you don't necessarily have the ability or wherewithal to actually live it.
Mm-hmm.
The second is actually bringing it into yourself and making it part of you.
Mm. Very good. Very good. And also what you said is very...
In the midst of reading all of my mind.
Wow.
And I don't recall anything on this.
On this subject of prophet... This is not a quote from Maimonides.
No,
But I've heard... in fact, I read this week about Maimonides. The difference between him and others is that when he was told something that to us would seem almost impossible,
mm-hmm.
he didn't say it's impossible.
Hmm.
He says he hasn't seen that,
mm-hmm.
you know, but he didn't rule it out. You know, a lot
mm-hmm.
of scientific things.
Mm-hmm.
And then later on, it turned out after many, many years, you know, like traveling to space and things.
Oh,
like
you're talking
that.
About having the open mind.
Yes, having the open mind. He had the open mind. He did not, even if it was something that was just totally alien to him, he wouldn't say no just because his experience had been no.
And I'm sure that's part of the process. But I think the seeing clearly is the result, and so is the recognizing it as truth is the result. It's beyond the process. It's actually the attainment, but two different levels. So, what are the two levels? It says that Moshe Rabbeinu had to always be ready to receive prophecy. And that's why he eventually separated from his wife. We learned about it, I think, 2 weeks ago, Bahalosecha,
mm-hmm.
and he was criticized, whatever. But because he had to always be pure, and because he never knew when he would receive his prophecy. Bilam, on the other hand, when he received prophecy, he knew it. In fact, he would decide when he's going to receive prophecy. He would be able to say, I'm going to receive prophecy now. He'll say he would say to Balak, you know, during the course of their attempts, he would say, wait here, I will find out what Hashem wants me to know.
You know about
Moses, man. No. Moses had to be on call. And Bilam was more, seemed to be more in control of his prophecy.
Not really. He could only prophesize through at night because he never could speak on it during the day.
Well, that may be so, yeah. And again, his prophecy was lower than Moses.
Yes.
But he seemed to have more control over it. And that seems counterintuitive. So keep that in mind as I tell you what Rav Dessler says. What Rav Dessler says is the difference between seeing clearly and recognizing it as true is that we have within us, because we have free choice and because we have a good inclination and because we have tremendous powers of concentration, we are able to do that. We can make ourselves see things clearly. In other words, by sitting and concentrating, we have the ability to be very honest with ourselves and to see things clearly. And have moments as human beings, and particularly as Jews, because we have a lot of the material and a lot of the information, a lot of the prepping and priming. That's a power that we all have. And we've even discussed that in our class previously, that I think with regards to the spies, that the spies were an error in terms of thinking how much hishtadlus, how much human endeavor they had to put in. And the reason why they were punished was because had they thought about it real hard, had they really concentrated and sought the truth, they would have realized that what they were doing was uncalled for. So we have, and we're held responsible for not doing that. We're held responsible for not making the right decisions. Even if it seems like it's hard to know, it's only hard to know because we're not really being honest and we're not really trying to see clearly. Okay, so we have within us the human potential is to see things clearly. And it takes a lot of effort and a lot of, you know, determination to do that. But even when a person decides to see things clearly and goes through that process, he'll see things clearly as long as he's trying to see things clearly. Distract him, and he may follow his whim and fancy. And the next minute he may be off and running, towards the forbidden. In other words, seeing clearly is like a power that we have, but we have to employ it. We have to look through the microscope in order to get to that point. So that's the level of yisbarer, seeing it clearly. There's another level of when you recognize that something is true. When you recognize that something is true, we're talking about something which is so clear that you don't have to think so hard to know that it's true. Don't walk out in the street when the cars are passing. You don't have to concentrate to know that that's true. And that's a higher level. And the difference between Bilam and Moshe was that Bilam had the power to remove all evil thoughts from his mind and to purify himself and to commune with God. He knew how to do it. He knew how to be pure. But he had to decide, I'm going to be pure now. Moshe, and therefore he could tell when he was going to get his prophecy, because he had this power of concentration that he could make himself a target of prophecy. Moshe, on the other hand, didn't go through that process. Moshe was a seer of truth. So prophecy could come to him even without trying. He was such a man of truth that prophecy would come to him. He didn't have to go sit down and say, I'm gonna get a prophetic vision now. Because he walked around with the recognition of truth, v'yisames, on the higher level, and therefore he had to be on call at any time. He didn't have to prepare himself. He was prepared. His radio was on. And that's the difference between Bilam and Moshe. Bilam was in fact a very evil person, but he knew how to make himself, he knew how to turn himself into a righteous person, into a pure person, almost like, you know, like a stunt. And that's how he was able to achieve prophecy. Moshe, on the other hand, was a man of truth, through and through. He could get prophecy anytime because truth lived within him. And of course, that affected the way he was. Of course, that affected his midos at all times, his character traits at all times were impeccable. He was always on, he was always ready. He was always on call, even without having to try. So what lesson does that have for us? Obviously, we're talking about, you know, the extreme personalities. But the lesson for us is that we have the ability to, at will, to engage in soul-searching and truth-seeking, and we have the ability to see things clearly. But this is something that requires discipline and, you know, made up our mind. And if we have to, if we're trying to make a decision, there's ways to go about making the right decision. We all have that ability, and that's something that if we don't try, that's not going to happen. We're always going to have the haze of the Eitz Hadas Tov Ra, the tree of knowledge of good and evil floating around in there. So it's not going to just happen without effort. Definitely we have that ability. That's what the study of Musar is all about, is sitting down, concentrating, focusing on a teaching, focusing on a truism of our sages, and concentrating on it and, you know, getting it into our psyche. That's an important level, and that's one of our obligations, one of the major obligations of life. But that's not the highest ideal. The highest ideal is to become a recognizer of truth, where these things become our instinct, where we don't have to try hard because the truth is evident. This is the level of Moshe Rabbeinu. So this is the idea. This is the lesson that can, one of the many, many lessons that can be gained from Parshas Balak, and a point that Rav Dessler brings out, and hopefully gives us a little bit of idea of who this Bilam person is.
Go ahead.